We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome on in to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. John McKechnie here with Mario Puig. Today we are getting into some ADP discussions. We're going to be looking at the Chiefs receivers, sorting them out by ADP, talking Juju Smith-Schuster, talking Sky Moore, the rest of the bunch, Mecole Hardman, MVS, all those guys. We're going to get into the Mark Andrews narrative because it seems like it's been bandied about a good bit on Twitter. So we're going to have to unpack and get into our own perspectives on how Andrews is going to do this year. And we're also going to get into the Cowboys receiving core because there's a lot up for discussion once you get past CeeDee Lamb. Let's start the show. Welcome back into the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. John McKechnie hanging out here with Mario Puig here on this Wednesday, breaking it down, getting into some ADP discussion. This podcast, again, brought to you by our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Mario, let's kick things off in Kansas City, where we have plenty of sample post-draft here to kind of get into the ADP discussion a little bit further. Let's get into it. I mean, let's start Juju Smith-Schuster right now. We're looking at NFC, so National Fantasy Football Championship data in their ADP dating back to draft weekend. Juju Smith-Schuster going his ADP checking in around 71. He's gone as high as pick 48. He's gone as low as pick 88. So that's a really wide range, especially considering like what part of the draft he's going in. And then, you know, you dig in a little bit further. Sky Moore ADP going as high as 76, as low as 163, but it's settling in at pick 116. So just give us your read here as it pertains to, you know, who's going where in this offense and who are the ones that you're targeting at cost?
Well, it's a pretty weird situation. I don't mean to make it sound like it's simple or anything, but I think from what we know, what we've seen so far, and what we have reason to believe as a result of that, we should assume Juju Smith-Schuster is pretty easily the leading target among these four guys. And I think that it's possible that a second receiver aside from him could be useful in fantasy. Obviously, I'm inclined to believe that if there is one, it would be Mecole Hardman. But it is possible, of course, that since Travis Kelce plays such a leading role, that with the wide receiver one in this offense at risk of being more like a wide receiver two in actual function, whoever the wide receiver three and four are might not matter that much, as tempted as we are to really hash it out down to the finer details. But one thing that I will say in the meantime is while I like Sky Moore, and I think I can go as far as to say like I was an early proponent of his, like since I've known of Sky Moore his freshman year of Western Michigan, I've always thought since then that he was underrated as a prospect. And then the draft showed up and him going in the second round, it was like, oh yeah, that's about right. A while ago, it seemed like Sky Moore wasn't even considered like a top five round sort of prospect. So that was a big win going in the second round. I don't think, however, that it makes him anything like a mega prospect or anything. It's just like the hype with him was more, it generated initially in a time when he was kind of overlooked, and now he's more appropriately known. But what people tend to do a lot of the times, you know, at least the people who took him in the 76th or whatever that highest pick was, they tend to look at everything in a very automated kind of way of reasoning, where they want to be able to put everything into a formula, a model thing that'll like spit out a definite right answer. And I don't think that it's true that just because some person has higher, or some player has higher draft capital than someone who's already on the team means that, oh, he's just going to plug in ahead of him because that's how the hierarchy, the formula dictates. And a lot of people are reasoning that exact way with Sky Moore, and the people picking him highest are probably even reasoning that Juju Smith-Schuster is like, I don't know what the hell people think about him. I mean, I saw one tweet from somebody saying that Marquez Valdes-Scantling is going to run ahead of Juju Smith-Schuster because Juju Smith-Schuster got less guaranteed money in his contract than Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That's hilarious. And it speaks to like a general misunderstanding about who these players are, I think. But like, whatever you think about Juju Smith-Schuster, this is a player who before the age of 22 had something like 2,500 NFL yards. You know, like he was putting top-notch efficiency marks with the Steelers too. Then he moved into the slot, and then he got hurt a bunch because Ben Roethlisberger just killed him. And then he went to the Chiefs in free agency as this player with 2 years of, you know, just dead production and injuries. And so those risk indicators are what dictated his signing bonus. It's not like the Chiefs looked at Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster and said, well, strictly on the basis of how many times we're going to target you, we're going to give you these respective signing bonuses. It's like, no, Marquez Valdes-Scantling was in a more of like a scarce market as a huge fast guy, even if he can't catch, which he can't. That was what they were paying him for, the being fast and tall thing. It wasn't to catch passes. And Juju, as more of a, especially since he's been labeled as a slot receiver, I don't buy that he is, but because he's been, you know, typecast as a slot receiver, he's viewed as more easily replaced, as more dispensable than a big fast guy. So that's what the market led him to. You know, he's like, if guys like Hunter Renfrow are going in the fifth round, yeah, why would you pay big money for a slot receiver if he's in free agency and he has no market and he's injury prone? But the Chiefs know that they need Juju Smith-Schuster to catch passes. And what it's going to do, or what it's going to end up being, I think, is Juju Smith-Schuster has a big year if his health is provided anyway. Like maybe he just keeps getting hurt. And at that point, it is more confusing yet to me how it could all work. Like, it could be Sky Moore who plugs right in. And Sky Moore was initially more of a slot receiver at Western Michigan, even though he's got the wheels to play outside, and he'll certainly do that. But I think Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be mostly an outside receiver for the Chiefs. I think Valdes-Scantling and Hardman are going to be the slot receivers. So I think he's going to just kind of rake. I think if Juju Smith-Schuster stays healthy, I think he's catching, I don't know, at least 90 passes this year. And part of that is because I do think he is the guy that he was with the Steelers early in his career. He was that guy at USC. It's more of a leap to me to imagine Juju Smith-Schuster as being anything other than those two things. Like that's a very Juju Smith-Schuster as anything other than an elite producer is a very recent development, and it only occurred in times where he didn't play due to injury. So I think he's clearly the guy, aside from Kelsey anyway, if he's healthy. And yeah, if Juju gets hurt, that's how Sky Moore can maybe pay off. But I also think even in that case, it's hasty to assume he'll run ahead of Hardman, who people just don't know details about him. Like, you can tell if you go around just doing like polls to people about what they think Mecole Hardman's numbers are at Kansas City, I guarantee almost everybody would take the under. Like, they don't know how much he generates yardage wise, touchdown wise per snap. They think something that isn't true about him because they haven't paid much attention. In the few times they did pay attention, like in the Super Bowl, it's like he dropped some pass, and then another one, it's like Jamel Dean jumped in front of it and people blamed him for that. And so they think of things like that, and they don't know the actual stuff of his numbers. And so I think he's clearly the bargain, if there is one, among the non-Juju Chiefs receivers. But even Hardman has obvious limitations. Like he is at risk of being a decoy deep. He's at risk of dropping passes over the middle of the field in traffic. But he's also clearly the most explosive player that they have aside, you know, they added more, and maybe he'll be something else. Like, he could kick ass, but he will need to kick ass to be as good as Hardman has been in the role that he's been in. And Hardman is still even now only in his fifth year playing receiver after playing corner his first year at Georgia and playing quarterback at high school. So him just turning 24, guys with his profile improve all the time. Guys with his youth and inexperience often change the nature of their play over the course of their early development. So I think since he's basically free, Hardman is clearly the one to pick aside from Juju Smith-Schuster. But I also think Juju Smith-Schuster is too cheap because I think if he plays 17 games, he's a wide receiver one. I don't think there's any doubt, honestly.
So let's get into it a little bit further when it comes to Juju Smith-Schuster, because, you know, the usage, again, over the last couple of seasons in Pittsburgh and obviously the injuries, but, you know, I think a lot of people are projecting him as the slot, as like the primary slot option for this offense. And therefore, you know, bumping, you know, guys like Sky Moore and MVS to the outside. And they think that those are the two players to target instead.
Yeah. And if he runs in the slot with the Chiefs, that's fine for Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, Tyreek Hill played mostly in the slot last year. They moved him inside a lot more. I don't know if that was to try to run him at the safeties in the two high, like theorized reasoning that like that way it's one-on-one with the safety instead of double teamed with the safety and the corner both playing zones on him. I don't really know for sure, but they already showed last year that they can channel most of the wide receiver usage to the slot if they need to. So if Juju Smith-Schuster is running the slot, that's fine. But I think people are wrong if they assume that he needs to play in the slot. He didn't for those first 2 years. He was mostly outside for the Steelers. He moved inside basically when they drafted Deontay Johnson. And I think that was largely to accommodate Deontay Johnson, because Deontay Johnson, he's too skinny to run those routes. If they run those Juju Smith-Schuster routes with Deontay Johnson, he's on IR the last 2 years instead of Juju Smith-Schuster. Hmm. So I think that it was kind of a de facto sort of thing. Like they're like, well, Deontay's got to play outside, so he's playing outside. Chase Claypool is going to be kind of like an all-purpose. He's going to swing between the slot and outside as needed. And Juju will be the slot guy when we have a slot rep, because, you know, he's 210. He's built pretty well. He's physical. He can do that. What they didn't anticipate was Ben Roethlisberger deteriorating in such a way that he couldn't throw to the middle of the field anymore without killing Juju. Anyway, he couldn't throw to the middle of the field anymore. So I know that people look at Juju Smith-Schuster playing the slot recently as a basis to assume he's a slot receiver, and they look at his lack of production the last 2 years as a basis for assuming he's some kind of bum, apparently. But no one was producing with that slot receiver role because Ben Roethlisberger couldn't set his feet fast enough to throw those routes. And even if he did, he knew they would get picked off, which is why, and I talked about this a lot, I don't know why more people don't notice this, Ben Roethlisberger would frequently catch a snap and just chuck it at Deontay Johnson, because he'd look at the middle of the field and he'd be like, I don't really know what's going on there. I know it's not good. I know I can't get the ball through it, whatever it is. So we're going over there. That's how it worked. And people who are incurious to actual football events and certainly tape of football games will look at those target numbers and just say, like, oh, he alpha'd. Like, that is not how an alpha receiver looks. An alpha receiver can post baseline efficiency above the team they play for. That's not what was happening with Deontay Johnson. And it's not his fault. Those targets weren't quality. They were fake targets. So it's just extremely wrong, I think, to assume anything in particular about Juju Smith-Schuster based on the last 2 years. It's just, it's a totally contaminated sample, I think. And the current ADP seems to base everything on that. Like, it seems like even to the extent that which Juju Smith-Schuster is drafted, it's sort of like the drafters are in question are just kind of going like, oh, hell, he's on the Chiefs. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. You can tell that the ADP for Juju Smith-Schuster no longer believes that he's actually a good player, but he is.
Right. No, I think that's a really good way of summing it up. I think that, yeah, the public has pretty much soured on Smith-Schuster because of the way that these last couple of seasons have gone. I guess, what, the last three seasons, really? Because
he's still 25. And I know he's been in the league. He was 20. I don't think he turned 21 until like the November of his rookie year. And he still barely missed 1,000 yards. And did they still have like a man? Who the hell? He was not the wide receiver two that year. And then the next year he was the wide receiver two and went for like 1,400 yards with superb efficiency. And even if you believe Antonio Brown drawing coverage was the main reason he did that, It's like, okay, well, the Chiefs have Travis Kelce and he has Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback. He did it at USC too. It's not like this is a recent thing for him.
Right. No, I remember back in the early college football.
People thought he was going to be like a top five pick until he ran a 4.54.
Exactly. Like he was as bankable as they got back in college. Like he was sick. So I hope he taps back into that. I hope he, you know, is able to stay healthy for this season. I mean, there's obviously just so much potential in this offense. What does this offense really look like? Because you can't just replace Tyreek Hill one to one. That was such a perfect
marriage.
They're
going to have to look different. They're going to have to look different. And I think they might run more than people want them to. The reason I'm not concerned if they do is because I think it'll work really well. We've seen Spencer Ware and Damian Williams put up just, you know, MVP caliber numbers as a running back in this system. And as much as that certainly had something to do with Tyreek Hill, I think it more so has to do with Mahomes. Like, even if Tyreek is out, Mahomes will scare to death any defensive coordinator. They're not just going to approach the Chiefs now like, we can suicide blitz. It's easy now because there's no Tyreek Hill. No, you play that too high anyway. And when you're playing that too high and when you grant so much space underneath out of the solidly based paranoia that you need to stop the deep pass against him, what that does is, and I think Kareem Hunt benefited from this too, like it just makes it easy to play running back on the team. That's why Jerick McKinnon, Darrell Williams were putting up numbers. People who don't watch the games are looking at the numbers like, wow, they're running all over the place. Like, no, the defense is not anywhere near them because they don't care and they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. So I think that if teams are going to defend you that way, you should say, well, to hell with you. We're going to bash you with the run game between the tackles until you bring one of those safeties up, and then we'll kill you deep again. And then, you know, we'll just win and you won't be able to do anything about it. Whereas last year, especially when Clyde Edwards-Helaire was hurt, they couldn't really call the defense on that bluff. The closest they came was that game, a couple games where Darrell Williams would catch like 10 passes for 100 yards every time uncovered underneath. And more than those plays, they would stand to benefit from play formations with personnel combinations that are the same as when they're throwing deep, but then run in those situations. Like you want to run from the same looks that you need to throw from, because the defense has to respect both in that case. Whereas it was more like you could kind of tell they weren't going to run when they would put Jerick McKinnon on the field. And over time, by the way, they would have adjusted to those underneath passes even eventually, but they weren't respecting the run. And not that it's the same thing, but you can remember a couple of years ago with the Seahawks when they fell apart in the second half of the year, Tyler Lockett was like, well, yeah, the defense started doing this stuff. They started sitting on our routes where we were, you know, we were killing them in the early, you know, 6 weeks or whatever it was. But then defenses started sitting on our routes and we couldn't make them pay for that. Like that's like the tension point that the Chiefs are at, I think. And Ronald Jones isn't very good, but he's definitely good enough to run in that situation. At least if Damian Williams and Spencer Ware are, so is Ronald Jones. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been effective as a runner. He's just been hurt a lot. So the way I see this offense going is Clyde Edwards-Helaire getting like 8 to 10 carries per game, Ronald Jones getting like 10 and up to 20 as needed, depending on the game flow. And this is another reason, by the way, I'm a little skeptical that there will be a wide receiver 3 producing in this offense. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because he's the only one who can play passing downs, is going to play all the passing downs, which is to say he's going to get all those reps that went to Darrell Williams and Jerick McKinnon last year, losing some of the run share to Ronald Jones. But I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a much better threat candidate, I should say, to be the third leading reception leader behind Kelce and the wide receiver one. I'm assuming Juju, of course. But I think he's a much better bet to clear like 60 receptions this year than Sky Moore is.
Okay. All right.
They're going to have to move to the backfield a little bit. And I also like Isaiah Pacheco as far as that goes. Cause if you give that guy space, if you don't try to play the gaps against him, I mean, he's definitely fast and he's definitely going to run hard and he's not going to go down easy, especially if you let him get 5 yards of steam going. So I think they could kind of go wild on the ground this year, even though no one respects the running backs really.
Yeah, that's a really good point. All those running backs are obviously relatively cheap at cost. I guess rounding it back out for best ball, in years past, it became essentially impossible to pull off the real Chiefs stack unless you had a third round reversal where, you know, again, I'm talking about Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill with your first three picks. That's what you'd have to spend it on. Obviously, that's different this time around. Are you entertaining the idea of going with some Chiefs stacks now that it's a little bit more affordable? Obviously, you're going to have to spend your second and third on Mahomes and Kelce. But when you can wait till the sixth, seventh round to get a Juju Smith-Schuster, you can wait a little bit later for a Sky Moore, or maybe not that much later, as we just established. Is that something that you're gonna test out at all?
If there's a part that I can't get on board with, I mean, it could be Kelce. Don't get me wrong. Do you got to take him at like 12 at the latest? Still, I don't even know.
Pretty much.
Okay. That's a little tough to swing, but I guess if you're talking about a portfolio of best ball teams and you're basically trying to line up some amount of exposure to pretty much every scenario, then yeah, if you're trying to get a cheap stack, Kelce at that price is fine. More likely the hang up for me would be Pat Mahomes, who I have no doubts about him at all as a player, but the price, I'm not that inclined to take a quarterback early anyway. So subtracting Tyreek Hill, I don't know if I'm going to want to make the Mahomes pick. It's like if he pays off as a part of that stack, I think it would almost require like other quarterbacks getting hurt or something like that. And that stuff happens, or are the quarterbacks, you know, are the bargains that we're counting on. Sometimes they fall through for reasons that, you know, aren't really their fault and that we couldn't anticipate. But I feel like Mahomes anywhere before the fifth round is just kind of begging for a bit of a dud pick there.
That's a good call. And, you know,
especially if they run more.
See? Yeah. And yeah, there's just going to be less of those big, you know, game shifting, long touchdowns and things like that. So
also that defense could get better. Like they might not need, like there are plenty of games over the past few years where Mahomes went totally nuts basically because the defense didn't show up. And if that happens even this year, he'll still be Pat Mahomes in those cases, but they might not have as much pressure to score quickly basically as in past years.
No, that's a really good point too. So suddenly that, you know, it's too bad. I had gotten used to this Chiefs offense just being this constant, you know, you can tune in and, you know, they're the most fun team to watch every single Sunday. It's going to look pretty different this year.
I bet they're still going to be awesome. I think they're going to be a healthier offense this year. Cause last year Mahomes still had the volume, obviously, but there were too many cold stretches. There were too many stretches.
Oh, yeah, they couldn't get out of their own way for a really large chunk of the season. They're, you know, obviously like that game against the Bills on the Sunday night game was, not the playoff game, of course, but the regular season game was kind of like the nadir of their season. There are some other just kind of weird games where you're like, okay, all right, like, you know, the Chiefs stack is cheap and DFS, blah, blah, blah. And there was a reason why it just, you know, they kind of dudded out several different times there. Before we jump on over to our next talking point here, we got a couple of messages here. First one from our friends over at Blue Wire.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And a message from our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You will have complete control over your team's future. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create a dynasty of champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com and start building your dynasty today. All right, Mario, onward. We were just talking about a premier tight end in Travis Kelce. Let's get to the other guy who has his hat in the ring as far as tight end one is concerned for this year. That's Mark Andrews of the Baltimore Ravens.
I thought you were going to say Dalton Schultz for a second. It should have been really good. But yeah, Mark Andrews.
You're spoiling the ending of the show.
I know. Sorry.
But yeah, you know, Andrews obviously takes on a huge, you know, kind of a career year last year. The previous two seasons were obviously really good, really efficient, had missed a time here or there, over those previous two seasons in 2019 and 2020, plays every game last year. The snap count, and this isn't just because of the Ravens having an extra game last year, but you know, he played 884 offensive snaps. A year ago, goes over 100 catches for the first time in his career, 9 touchdowns, 8.9 yards per target. So despite the increased target volume, almost doubling from his 2020 total from 88 to 153, he still produced almost a yard better per target over the course of last season. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that it's hard to replicate that. It's hard to do that 2 years in a row. And that's obviously going to be a challenge for Andrews, but I think that, you know, the way that this team is set up as far as its receiving personnel is concerned, better for worse, like he's going to need to be handling 8+, 9+ targets every single week this year. And I think that there's a long enough sample of proof that he's able to like produce crazy numbers with that crazy volume.
Yeah. So I get why, as a general process, it might be bad to pay the redraft price for a player like Andrews when he had a season like he just had, because of course you're not really getting like a profit margin out of it. Like if that right. pick works, it's because he, you made other good picks and B, like you got, I won't say lucky, but you didn't get as much bad luck as you could have. Cause like you have no real margin for error. Like a couple bad games can throw him off of the course that he set last year and that you base the current price on. So it just makes it a little unstable in tournaments. That's not really a big deal. Best ball tournaments. I mean to say it's not a big deal. Cause like you have to take on some amount of risks. There's always going to be some amount of luck if you're winning in that. And Andrews is one of a very few number of tight ends. Like I guess at this point you could argue that Waller and Kittle don't even really have this much upside. It's like pretty much just Pitts, which is basically the wide receiver one in function of the offense. And with the Ravens, as much as you might worry about Andrews kind of having some regression from last year, getting rid of Marquise Brown will help offset that a little bit. Like there's a certain cushion there now that wouldn't have been there if Marquise Brown had been there. And that's specifically important because of how much of last year's sample was Mark Andrews's production sample was accumulated with Tyler Huntley at quarterback rather than Lamar Jackson. And I remember seeing people while that was happening, talking on Twitter about how like, oh, Tyler Huntley just has such great chemistry with Mark Andrews. He's working so great with Mark Andrews. And it's not that they had great chemistry exactly. And certainly it's not the case that Lamar Jackson couldn't have done the same thing, the reason Andrews was going off was because Huntley could not throw anywhere else.
No.
Marquise Brown was still getting plenty of targets, and none of those passes were getting anywhere near him. I know Huntley, he was certainly playing admirably. He was gutsy as hell, and he kept the Ravens in games that they, you know, if you had asked them, like, do you think you can play in this game without Lamar, you would have just assumed, like, no, they're done. And
no, the Huntley, Packers game, the Rams game, both of those, like, with Tyler Huntley as your starting quarterback, you should get smoked, and they didn't.
Yeah, he kept them in it, and that's all you can reasonably ask of a backup quarterback. But he was awful as a passer. He can't throw in the NFL, and he could only throw to the middle of the field and not very far down the middle of the field. So when he'd throw to Marquise Brown, being an outside receiver, downfield-oriented receiver, it was kind of like someone trying to just punt at him or something. Like, it just wasn't working. Whereas Andrews was much closer to Huntley in his throwing spot, and he was a bigger target, so you can't miss him as easily. So that was the reason that Andrews was hitting and Brown was not. The reason the volume was so high with Andrews, and I think part of why it was working so well too, was that over the past couple of years, defenses had begun to adjust to Lamar Jackson in a very particular way. And that particular way is they stopped running man coverage. They started running more defensive backs and covering more downfield. And that's because Lamar Jackson was murdering teams downfield in his first 2 years. You know, he had like, whatever, 36 passing touchdowns and like 400 attempts, something stupid like that. So he's killing them deep over and over. So they start trying to crowd that part of the field. After they started crowding that part of the field, Greg Roman, because he's a moron, instead of trying to take the open underneath spots and make the defense, you know, he didn't counter adjust to the defense's adjustment and then keep the defense off balance. What he did was
that's kind of like always been his thing, right? Like his offenses have had success year one, year two in a lot of different spots. I mean, you know, dating back to what, the San Francisco Super Bowl run in 2012, you know, didn't he get Buffalo to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor and stuff before taking over in Baltimore? Like he has a history of like that surprise, like sucker punch first year, but he doesn't counter adjust, like you said.
Yeah. And with Lamar, you can tell, and if you just look at the way they ran these offenses, like with the Tyler Huntley games and then the Lamar games, the offenses are run fundamentally different. And you can see that Roman made the adjustment with Huntley that he should have made with Lamar. But the reason he made it with Huntley was because he had no choice but to do it. Like Huntley can't throw 10 yards. So he was like, all right, I guess we got to call a bunch of short routes so we can hopefully stay competitive with Huntley. And if Roman were a smart person, he would have done that with Lamar, got better results than he did with Huntley, and he would have opened up the entire offense going forward indefinitely, because if they had targeted Mark Andrews and the rest of those receivers, moreover, like if they lowered the depth of target for all those receivers and ran them underneath with Lamar Jackson, like they did with Tyler Huntley, you would have seen those big games from Andrews. Just, they would have been bigger, and they would have been games that they won on the way to their playoffs because Lamar Jackson would have been the quarterback instead of, you know, Huntley. So I only mention all of that to say it was in a weird way the best case scenario for Andrews last year, but I think it might be another pretty close to best case scenario with Brown gone and Lamar Jackson on the field. The one thing I'm anxious about is I can easily imagine Greg Roman going back to his just stupid as hell plan with Lamar, which is just do lots of run fakes and just have everybody run like 15-yard posts and fly routes and things like that. And that'll all work out. And it won't. And because defenses have been sitting on those routes when Lamar was on the field. And Lamar 2 years ago already was saying after, I don't even remember which game it was, but he was saying, yeah, before the snap, the defense was telling everybody what our plays were. They were saying, yeah, where our guys are going to go. That's Roman. That's all Roman being predictable and running these reliable tendencies in certain situations. And he broke from those tendencies with Huntley out of necessity, out of physical limitation with Huntley. And the offense actually did briefly get better. That's why you saw, I don't know who it was, like Charles Woodson, I think. Sorry if I'm slandering Charles Woodson with somebody else's stupid opinion. But somebody like that was saying, man, they sure seem to have something with Huntley that they don't with Lamar. What they had with Huntley that they didn't with Lamar was the offensive coordinator thinking for the first time, maybe I should call a slant. Maybe I should call a 5-yard curl. And it wasn't that he thought of it, is that he looked at Huntley and said, I can't call any other kind of route with this guy. And he was right. But defenses didn't adjust to it immediately because they thought, hey, Ravens, hey, mobile quarterback, We got to sit at the 15 yards. We got to five DBs all the time, sit at 15 yards minimum. And that's when Andrews was raking because no one was in the middle of the field and underneath where he was.
So how does this all work this year?
Well, if Roman gets struck by lightning and becomes a smarter version of himself, what would happen is they would go into it more pragmatically than in the past. They would go into a game with a game plan that's prepared to go deep if the defense offers it, or if the defense crowds deep, something more like with the Huntley game plans from last year. I just cannot give Greg Roman the benefit of the doubt and assume that he's going to do that. I love Lamar. I love Andrews. I love everything pretty much about that offense. I even love Devin DuVernay if they use him the right way. But all of that depends on Greg Roman, and I don't know how to put it all together. And I just can't assume he'll do that. So with that said, in Andrews' very particular case, I think they are so dependent on him as the functioning wide receiver one in light of that Marquise Brown trade that the volume will be there again, target wise, and it would take him falling off efficiency wise to disappoint. And I'm only able to go to a certain line with that. Even, you know, it's like, I think even if the defense knows where Mark Andrews and Lamar Jackson are going on a given play, those two can still beat the defense more than most tandems. So, and I think that's right. Exactly what's been going on. Even when Lamar has had a clearer success than he did last year, I think that was like, basically the defense just kind of knows like, all right, well, we got to watch the run threat. And if we account for that, we got to make sure we didn't, you know, lean too far forward and let Andrews pass us or Brown pass us, but they're only going to go to these two spots. And it's like, you can still lose surprisingly easy because then at one moment where you see the fake, if you think it's actually a run and you guess wrong what it is, like, you can give up that pass even if you knew where it was going. So it's concerning with Roman, and I think it precludes the best case scenario. I just think that with Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews' floor is so high because he is the answer to the question of what are they doing at receiver. They answered the question of what they're doing at receiver by taking Charlie Kohler and Isaiah Likely in the fourth round of the draft. What they told you is Mark Andrews is not playing in line very much anymore.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. So I think you framed it right in the sense that there's the profit margin sense, like, because you're going to have to take Mark Andrews probably like late second, early third round, depending on the format. So, I mean, it's tough for him to outproduce that you're baking in like a really high level of production that you need back from that in order for it to just break even. What are your thoughts just like when it goes back to this offense, because there's so many things that are kind of inapplicable from last year, the defense being terrible and having injuries everywhere. And then, you know, the backfield, if it's back on track to where it was in 2020 or 2019, you know, what does that do for the overall health of this offense?
Yeah. So as much as I obviously am quick to bash Greg Roman, part of why he was shown so conclusively for a fraud last year is because those running backs got hurt. Talking about Dobbins and Gus Edwards, and I'm including Gus Edwards. I know a lot of people like to look at Gus Edwards and be like, oh, he's going to get cut now because he tore his ACL. He's an undrafted draft capital.
That's
like,
crazy.
Man, they can't find anybody to do his job as well as he does it in that offense. Like, people are just so stupid about this sometimes. Gus Edwards is a total hammer and an automatic 5 yards to them between the tackle. They need 5 yards. He gets it. There's no yep. question about it. And that's not something that NFL teams just dispense with because what was it like? Someone thought like, oh, this undrafted guy had a higher grade from PFF in college and he's going to come in and win. It's like, no, that unless you think that guy is taking 150 carries and giving them 750 yards, he is not taking Gus Edwards off the field. So what the deal is, though, is some of those looks last year when the defenses are putting five DBs on the field and Lamar is dropping back the pass and he's just like standing there. No one's getting open. He's waiting. And eventually in the second half, he just starts running. And that's when they would score all their points in the first 6 weeks or whatever it was until he got hurt. In those situations, having Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins will make the defense pay for that. Because if they want to run zone coverages with five DBs, there's only so much accounting for the gaps that you can do with how you align the defense.
without giving away the coverages, which defeats the entire purpose. If Lamar Jackson guesses right what your coverages are before the snap, it's a touchdown. So you have to make sure that he's spending a second or more after the snap waiting to see where the coverages drop. And if you're doing that, you're not specifically lining up your defenders over gaps. And if you're not defending your gaps against Gus Edwards, he's breaking through your safeties. So they have to account for gaps more. And if they don't take their gaps seriously, some of those plays last year where Lamar Jackson got the ball instead and just, you know, patted the ball for 10 seconds and ran around after that, those instead will be carries to Dobbins and Edwards that go for 10 yards or more until the defense brings in the defensive backs a little and starts playing more gap defense. Those runs will be there. Players like Dobbins and Edwards will get them. Guys like Tyson Williams and Devontae Freeman and Le'Veon Bell couldn't. So they couldn't make the defense pay for that stuff. They couldn't make them play honest defense, basically. This year, they'll have to play honest defense. They'll know more or less what the route combos are, perhaps, when they do call pass plays. But if they don't put a run viable defense on the field and the Ravens run it, they'll just get their asses kicked all day.
Yeah, and, you know, the offensive line should be better this time around. First of all, there's no Alejandro Villanueva out there anymore. you replace that. I think Ronnie Stanley should be back and good to go.
And I hope so.
Hopefully. That injury, like as the ink was drying on his contract, that was brutal.
I mean, glad he got paid, I guess. I know it's not good for your Ravens, but, yeah, man, that is – They're putting a lot on him, so I sure hope that they're right to be optimistic, because I don't know what they think their plan is. And last year, though, they already blew it, you know? Like, last year, they were in that position, and they had Villanueva. I hope they're not just whistling past the graveyard again on that.
No, and so we'll see.
But anyway, with Linderbaum at center, like, they couldn't – who the hell was their center even? There were so many plays with –
I think it was Patrick McCary.
Yeah, there were so many plays where Lamar's picking up these ground balls, like, in the shotgun. Yeah.
McCary.
Hopefully those days are done now.
Yeah, and I guess Bozeman was in there a bit. I mean, it was like a mess outside of like Kevin Zeitler last year. But, you know, you bring it – they brought in Morgan Moses. The offensive line needs to work for any of this to work, I think. And
having those running backs will help, though, because one thing the data-brained people never pick up on is – I should say the pass obsessed anti-running back people are slow to pick up on, is that if you ask a defensive lineman or a linebacker what they like to do, they'll tell you something like, I like to pursue, I like to chase people. And it's harder to chase people after you've been run blocked a bunch of times in a row, and including the quarterback. It's hard to chase the quarterback on a passing play, even if it's third and nine and you know it's that you're rushing the passer. You're not going to have as much juice in that situation if you just had to defend the run eight times before that, because it's a fundamentally different experience as a defender. When you're defending the run, the offensive line is attacking you. You have to try to figure out where the ball's going as people try to push you backwards. Whereas on a passing play, they don't engage you because they're sitting back and trying to stay in front of the quarterback. It's a lot more stressful emotionally and physically. You literally just get punched and pushed around a lot more in the run game, because you're not pursuing, you're being pursued. Mm-hmm. So you take some juice out of the pass rush for Lamar when he's going back to pass, if you get, you know, 40 yards out of Edwards and Dobbins on that drive before he throws it.
No, totally. So it should look different. I think you lay out a really good case as to Roman needing to make the counter adjustment, and history has shown that he isn't really good at that. But I think at least this year,
maybe he finally turned the corner at like 56 or whatever he is.
If he logged on to twitter.com and searched the posting scout, I think he'd really change his tune. Listener Johannes has a couple comments here regarding Charlie Kohler. So Raven, I guess that's Eric DaCosta probably, or he's more like the GM, right, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, says that Kohler in the Ravens scouting eye said that he had similar traits to Andrews in his route running, spatial awareness, that kind of thing. And they expect him and Isaiah Likely to both be like the F tight ends in this offense. I will say when it comes to the rookies, because it is interesting when you look at how like just kind of bad this receiving core is outside of Rashad Bateman. And yes, like we have optimism for Devin Duvernay, but you got to call it what it is at a certain point. Like that, right now on paper, this is a bad receiving core, right? So, so
if Andrews is not in it, it's bad. Yeah,
right. So you look at Andrews, they go ahead and they spend two draft picks on the tight ends. I think I don't know who I think is going to be the one that wins out, but I think that there's some passing game work possibly available for one of those two. I'm just not sure which one it is.
Yeah. So the Charlie Kohler thing is an interesting comment because I would say he's similar to Mark Andrews only in three senses, basically a Big 12 tight end. And the other two being, they both did produce volume as pass catchers. Charlie Kohler caught a lot of passes at Iowa State. And the third is Charlie Kohler and Mark Andrews are both fast by tight end standards. I actually think there's a pretty big divide between the two in terms of, I don't know. It's something to do with skill and like technique, I guess. But I think Charlie Kohler is a lot more like a person, a lot more like a player like Dan Arnold than Mark Andrews. And by that, I mean, Dan Arnold is a pretty athletic guy and he can make some catches, but he's also kind of off rhythm all the time. And he doesn't really, he never just looks sharp on the field. Even his catches that he does make, it's like everything feels like he's just falling down all the time. Charlie Kohler, I don't think really knows what he's doing as a receiver. I think in the Big 12, he just kind of showed that it's if you're 6'7 and run a 4.62, you can generate a certain amount of production because you're just so big and fast compared to the people trying to defend you. I think he's more of like a rotational backup in the NFL, and I don't think he can do many things that Mark Andrews does. But as far as Kohler and Likely both being more pass catchers than blockers, that is true in the general inline prototype sense. But what you can do with guys like that is run a lot more jumbo formations. You can even run like a three tight end kind of thing where it's like Nick Boyle, by the way, is the blocker. He's a different subtype of tight end than Andrews or Likely or Kohler. And he's going to be the inline guy. He's going to be the Lee Smith or whatever.
I don't even know if he's really like good. I mean, they had to restructure his deal that they draft two tight ends. He played 31 snaps in his first game back last year. Didn't play more than 20 the rest of the way. Like I'm worried that knee injury he had against New England.
If he can't play, then they don't have actual tight ends. He's their only actual tight. Even Andrews is not a real tight end. He's a
right.
Big receiver. They can either be wrong about Boyle and have to sign somebody else, or they're going with Boyle. I mean, he's a different position than those other guys. So if he can't play, they're going to have to, run a four wide offense with tight ends at the slots. I don't know what they think they're going to do. Right. I don't think they're going to do that. But in any case, it is a lot different to have two tight end reps on the field blocking and have those two guys be maybe more receiver types such as Kohler and Likely. And it's another to have only one tight end rep and have that tight end be Kohler or Likely. What that does is it just gives them more flexibility and just like putting mass on the field. And I think that can only really be utilized toward giving Andrews more wide receiver reps. Like, I think they could have a formation where it's like two, maybe Kohler and Likely are on, the weak side the strong side as tight ends, one of them in line, the other to the outside of him. And then Andrews could be the one receiver on the weak side. And they could have an I formation behind those people, like with Ricard and the run game, stuff like that. They could go just like a mega jumbo offense. But whatever way they do it, I can only see it working toward the end of giving Mark Andrews consistent wide receiver function, which is what he needs to offset the Likely, regression in his efficiency or whatever from last year.
So she also brings up an interesting parallel here. Johannes does. So the Ravens and Pats bringing like the 12 sets or 12 personnel, with the one back, two tight ends. And obviously the Patriots example being Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. Do you see that type of thing developing potentially?
I don't know. I mean, if the more Kohler plays, the worse for DuVernay and Prochet, I guess we can at least say. Because I don't think he's really taken anything from Bateman or anything, and certainly not Andrews. So they could do that. I mean, I guess we'll see. The people that I know who I tend to outsource my tight end blocking judgments on, I don't know anything about blocking. But the people that I trust with that stuff, they say Kohler is a total goof and like can't do it.
That's too bad. That's,
I mean, but he can be a better Dan Arnold, because Dan Arnold, whatever, he sucks, but he could have been good at some things if he were different than how he is, and specifically if he were 25 pounds heavier like Kohler is. Kohler is as fast as Dan Arnold and 25 pounds heavier, so that matters, even if he doesn't have any idea what he's doing. But you can get away with not knowing what you're doing when you're bigger and faster than everybody.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. He's got, I think he's got like elite tackle arm length. Like he's got like 34 and a
half
inch arms.
He's so weird. He's so tall and skinny.
Like a human forklift.
Yeah, he's just like this fast like pencil on the field. I don't know. It's so weird. He's tall and skinny, and he is fast. And I don't know, the Iowa State tape that I was watching just felt like he was just kind of like just stumbling everywhere all the time. But he was putting up numbers and you know, being 6'7" and running a 4.62. The defense has to do something to account for that. Like they have to understand, like, he can catch at this height and radius at these various catch points. And like, we got to have somebody standing around or else he'll just do it. Even if he doesn't really, even if he's a bad route runner or whatever, it's like that height, that speed can snare a lot of catches over a good amount of space.
Right. Yeah. That's a pretty serious catch radius that he's bringing to the table. So that was quite the discussion on Mark Andrews. So let's give it a TLDR, but in audio form. Yes or no on Andrews this year at cost?
Definitely not no, but I would want to maybe contain the exposure, at least unless his price drops at some point. Not that I can imagine why that would be.
Okay. All right. That works succinctly. Let's finish things out. Let's get on over to Dallas. So Amari Cooper gone, obviously. CeeDee Lamb, of course, now, you know, one of the top receivers going off the board. He's a lock, you know, mid-second round type of guy. ADP just pretty much in that same range as Deebo Samuel. And he kind of marks the end of a receiver tier. Sorry for stammering there for a second, but you know, after you get to CeeDee Lamb at roughly ADP 17, you get to Kamara, Andrews, as we mentioned, Leonard Fournette, Chubb, and then Tyreek Hill is the next receiver. So he that seems to be the formation of a draft tier as it pertains to the receiver position. So I mean that obviously, you know, CeeDee Lamb, if you want him this year, it's going to cost you. But I think that, you know, he's all the rationale is there for him, you know, having another terrific season, of course. But where does it go from there as far as this receiving core goes? Because Michael Gallup is back. Cedric Wilson is gone. But Gallup is coming off that late season knee injury that they bring in James Washington. But I couldn't be more out on James Washington. And then they bring in Jalen Tolbert, who I liked a lot and can play both, you know, slot and outside. I thought that he was going to go higher than he did personally, but I think that sneakily, you know, there's a way that Tolbert does well this year, because again, the two stumbling blocks ahead of him being a guy who I don't think is very good in James Washington and a guy coming off an ACL.
Yeah. This is a tough one for me to think through, because I'm high on a few of the players. Like, I'm high on Dak. Love CeeDee Lamb. I think CeeDee Lamb as a talent is just awesome. I think he's very close to the Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase kind of understood level of talent. Not that I'm saying he's as good as them. He's probably not, but I don't think there's that much gap. I think CeeDee Lamb can be a total monster. And I think the reason that he disappointed late last year didn't have anything to do with him. I think it had everything to do with Mike McCarthy and in a sense, Amari Cooper, because they changed up their target tendencies a little bit in those final like five games or whenever Amari Cooper went to the press and was like, I'm not getting enough targets. And he was right to say that, but that just leads back to, I guess, the initial point that Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore, whoever's fault it is, they were not running that offense well. And because they are not doing the offense well in some of the ways exactly the same as Mike McCarthy didn't do it well in Green Bay, I'm inclined to blame McCarthy. But that doesn't really matter for CeeDee Lamb if McCarthy is still the head coach, because either Kellen Moore can usurp him somehow, or he's going to keep deferring to McCarthy's judgment, which is awful. But what they would do last year, and this got really bad, if I remember right, it was definitely against the Cardinals, and I think the other game was against the 49ers. And both of those teams were down to practice squad corners, especially the Cardinals. They were playing like Antonio Hamilton or something like that at corner. And Amari Cooper, to get more targets, was kind of playing a little bit more slot than CeeDee Lamb. And just as a general tendency of the offense, they would usually send CeeDee Lamb pretty far downfield, you know, like 12 plus yards. And that would be the case regardless of what these defenses were presenting. And in the case of the Cardinals and the 49ers, because they had these backup practice squad corners on the field, they were playing off coverage. They didn't want them playing press, bump and run coverage because they knew they couldn't do it. They knew they'd get smoked if they tried to cover these receivers with these corners. So they said, well, the hell with it. We're not going to try to cover you. We're just going to sit back in off coverage, especially because every single snap CeeDee Lamb's running, you know, 12 yards or so. We're going to put our corner at 10 and tell him not to budge until CeeDee Lamb's within 5 yards of him. And then we're going to tell him, like, just cover your third of the field. And because CeeDee Lamb was running these routes that took 2.5-3 seconds to develop, and because these corners were only sitting in parts of the field where it would take 2.5-3 seconds to get to that depth, CeeDee Lamb was just running into coverage over and over and over. Instead of running away from corners and having the corners pursue him, he was basically running at the corners because his routes made him do that. He had to just run where these guys were running to, even though he knew they were going there. He couldn't do any. The only way he could have gotten open was to ignore McCarthy's play call and run his own route. So that's at once not his fault and also potentially an enduring obstacle, because McCarthy, instead of being fired like he should have, instead of never being hired like he never should have been, he's in charge still. And until that changes, what reason do we have to think that their approach will change? Now, the offsetting thing is, of course, Cooper's gone. Gallup is hurt. I also think Gallup's generally a little overrated. Like, I think he's fine. I don't think he's truly good exactly. I think he's more like an average starter, like a non-liability kind of starter. Week 17 ACL tear. I don't know what to make of that. James Washington and Tolbert are interesting, of course. I guess what I'll say on CeeDee Lamb is I am generally inclined to buy, because I think he's so good and I think Dak is really great. And if those two are really working closely together and Dak's doing kind of like hot route stuff with CeeDee Lamb that he isn't the other receivers, I can imagine him going off, like league receiving title kind of going off, especially if they move him around, if they use pre-snap motion, if they call a variety of route depths, if they just make him run 12-yard posts over and over and the defense knows it, that could have a diminished return. But at the very least, there should be like three more targets per game, or two, three more targets per game to hopefully offset that. So I'm inclined to buy Lamb up to a certain exposure point.
So Johannes is bringing up the point that, you know, T Higgins being cheaper, maybe go after someone else in a CeeDee Lamb's range and then circle back at the beginning of the third round and go after T Higgins.
Yeah, I love Higgins too. And the other qualified candidates in that range of the ADP is the only reason I'm slightly hesitant with Lamb. Like, I want Lamb exposure because I can so easily imagine him raking if he can break from, you know, McCarthy. But there's also good players in that range who are similarly talented, including Higgins. So I would keep the exposure limited to a certain percentage. But I'm not, I don't know how to say this. I'm kind of concerned for the Dallas offense in general. I don't know if they know what they're doing, and I don't know if they're prepared to do something different than last year. And I think if they don't do something different than last year, you could have more games than usual. And we already have too many of these games where Dak Prescott just doesn't do anything for like three quarters, and then they seem to do a kind of comeback late in the game, but it's not a real comeback. It's just, mm-hmm. They ran a bunch of hurry up snaps against a prevent defense. That is going to happen even more, I think. So I'm worried that there's going to be a lot of, you know, bet the under on the Dallas offense in the first halves is what I would say at the very least, because I think they're going to be dependent on Dak going like hurry up and aggressive and desperate to do anything, especially against good defenses. Especially against well-coordinated defenses. The question of whether Washington, I'm not really pursuing Gallup. I'd like to see him do well. I'd like to, you know, see him help Dak. I like Dak. But I don't think Gallup is that good, and I don't think the ACL helps. So to me, it's more a question of can Washington or Tolbert do anything? And I'm like you. I mean, I like Tolbert. He's a bit overaged for his year, his experience level. So he might be more developed than most rookies are. Like he might not need as much development time. And if so, the question of whether he takes work from Washington, I guess, would depend on what they're asking that rep to do, because there's certain things that Washington just cannot do as well as Tolbert. And I would say like underneath stuff, especially like Tolbert's a really good route runner. He can create separation underneath, even though he's kind of like a deep ball guy at South Alabama. It's like he can definitely work the intermediate and the underneath, whereas Washington, I don't think can. Like maybe he can take like a bubble screen and do something underneath, but he can't. Washington is a problematic category of a receiver because he's most skilled downfield, but he's a build-up
speed
receiver.
But he doesn't win downfield, yeah.
He's not fast off the line. He's not great at evading jams, so he's pretty dangerous if you let him get to that depth as a defense. But practically speaking, the quarterback is usually getting rid of the ball by that time, so it's kind of like a you'd almost have to just devise a really bad offense to create the kind of infrastructure that James Washington needs to produce. If he's their best option and no one else is playing, I'll say, sure. He's probably going to do something. Cause at that point it's either Dak does nothing or Washington does something, but I'm not taking Washington until the very last rounds. And it doesn't really matter to me whether it's best ball or redraft. I think he's fine for both. In redraft, you can just cut him if it turns out he's the wide receiver 4. And in best ball, if he's the wide receiver 4, it's fine. I mean, he's going to have like a couple long catches, a couple long touchdowns. And in best ball, that as long as that stuff happens, it's not a huge deal that he's inconsistent the rest of the time. But I do worry that Tolbert's just going to basically beat him from day one.
Yeah. So do you have some interest in Tolbert as, you know, someone that, you know, will, you know, say you're getting into like you're filling your last three, you know, skill positions at one.
Yeah. The only reason I'm not, the only reason I haven't like gone in on Tolbert, I guess, is because I'm pretty agnostic about the whole thing. Like to me, it's like Gallup, Tolbert and Washington are all kind of an equal toss up. And I don't really know. I don't really know how we're supposed to discern them, but Tolbert is the one they need to use of those three if they're looking for underneath and intermediate stuff. And I don't know if Tolbert can play the slot, then that too, because I guess Washington can line up in the slot. Maybe Gallup can too. I don't know. But they're only running like posts and fly routes and corner routes. They're not running slants. They're not running across the field. They can't do that. So if they need that rep to do that, then it has to be Tolbert.
See? So, but I'm interested. You know, I'm not.
Somebody's
going
to do something. It's just going to. It's like hard to tell what Dallas is going to try to do, basically. Because
I like Tolbert. You know, I've liked him for a couple years now. I'm probably not going to be the guy setting the new min on him, but you know, there are definitely some receivers that I think
in best ball I would want some exposure to both of them.
Yeah. Yes.
And I guess you could have them. Hell, if they're cheap enough, you can put them on the same team even.
There it is. I'll say this. Like I'll probably have it relatively same ADP, both rookies. I'll have a lot more Tolbert than David Bell, probably.
Yeah, I'm on board with that in large part. I don't think Deshaun Watson's playing this year, but that's a different subject.
And
I don't think Baker's playing for the Browns either. It's whoever the hell else they got laying around.
Dang. So that all those
but
Browns. Super
Bell
Bowl
in 2023,
features.
I'm pretty interested. I still think he's probably pretty good, but Tolbert, it's like Dallas needs him for certain play concepts, and maybe they don't run those play concepts, but if they do, they're not getting anywhere with Washington and Michael Gallup running, you know, like 8 yard in routes from the slot.
No. So Tolbert, keep an eye. Put it, if he wasn't on your radar before, he should be there now. Thanks everyone for tuning in on the live stream, and thanks everyone for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, presented to you by Dynasty owner for Mario Puig. I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for checking it out.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.